How would you like to attend a conference and hear Larry Rast, Carl Fakencher, Brian Wolfmiller, Adrian Dorheinz, Will Wheaton, Chris Roseborough, and Jonathan Fisk? You're invited to the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 10th and 11th in Collinsville, Illinois. Registration is $100. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 10th and 11th in Collinsville, Illinois. issuesetc.org.
You may have heard Senator Sanders say, "I'm unqualified to be president." Well, seriously, seriously, I've been called a lot of things over the years, but unqualified has not been one of them.
That's Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton speaking to supporters recently in Buffalo. Now, every presidential hopeful will say that they're not only qualified, but that they're the best qualified for the job. That's certainly the message that Secretary Clinton wants to send to her supporters and to everyone else. She's the best qualified to do the job. And it's not unusual for the same candidate to turn around and say that their opponents, be they in the same party or another party, are completely unqualified. So that's not an unusual charge to be leveled at any presidential hopeful, including Hillary Clinton. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Wednesday afternoon, April the 13th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to get our update on the November elections with Mark and Molly Hemingway here in the first half hour of Issues Etc. Then we're going to spend some time with Dr. Carl Fakencher. Looking forward to Sunday morning. According to the three-year lectionary, it's Good Shepherd Sunday coming up there. Then we'll talk big business and religious liberty. Georgia State Senator William Ligon has written a recent column for the Wall Street Journal titled, "Why Are Companies Taking Sides Against Religious Liberty?" He knows of where he speaks because he was trying to get a religious liberty bill passed in his state, and the governor, if you recall, vetoed it under pressure from big business inside and outside the state. We'll spend some time with Dr. Al Culver, Director of Church Relations for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, talking about Monday's vote by the Norwegian Lutheran Church to allow same-sex marriages. You can join us with questions or comments over the course of the next 2 hours. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MY-IE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback at issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc. Our beloved on-demand listeners, whenever, wherever you listen, use the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us for our weekly update on the November elections, Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, welcome back.
Hey, glad to be back.
And Molly Hemingway, senior editor for the Federalist. Molly, welcome to you as well.
It's great to be here with you.
Let's take up the subject, Molly, of Secretary Clinton kind of trying to deflect the accusation from Bernie Sanders that she's unqualified. I've never been called that before. You have not only here on these airwaves, but elsewhere, said she's not just a bad candidate. You've recently written that she is, in fact, unqualified for the job. Make your case.
Well, what I found most interesting about what happened last week is what a big deal it became when Bernie Sanders said that his opponent was not qualified. And it led newspapers. It led the evening newscast. Everyone was so upset and defensive about Hillary Clinton being called unqualified. And nobody questioned her claim that she had never been called unqualified. And I don't know if I'm just older than a lot of political reporters, but I don't even remember the first time I heard, or, you know, I had heard the claim that she was unqualified during her husband's presidency. But it was a thing you heard frequently and often about how she was disqualifying herself or unqualifying herself for various positions, whether it was taking over the White House travel office and firing everybody and replacing it with her friends, or her attempt to pass Hillary Care, which was a precursor to Obamacare, and how what job she did with that. It is not true that it's out of bounds to call your opponent unqualified. It's almost the basic assumption. If you thought that they were qualified, you would not run against them. And I think we need to clarify what is meant by unqualified. It doesn't mean this person held jobs that seem like they would be a good precursor to presidency. It means that someone has the right skills and knowledge, expertise, and judgment to do a job well. Just because Hillary Clinton, you know, served as Secretary of State, where she oversaw the invasion of Benghazi, of Libya, and oversaw what happened there and the resultant chaos that came from that, that doesn't mean she's qualified. In fact, it speaks to her lack of qualifications in her foreign policy. There's many things that someone might reasonably have a problem with Hillary Clinton in terms of her prudence, her judgment about when and where to invade countries, how she handled the reset with Russia, which ended up being a disaster, her general foreign policy approach, her idea about whether unborn people should have their lives protected not at all or at all. There are many issues of legitimate gripe with Hillary Clinton, and the media claimed that it was sexist to say that she was unqualified, and that's just, it's actually sexist to say that you can call anyone unqualified except for the woman who's running for president.
Mark, what are your thoughts on the qualifications of Senator Clinton?
Well, I think Molly's exactly right. I mean, qualified used to mean not just that you had held a certain title, but that you've actually been, good at the job. And I think that there's a lot of evidence to suggest that Hillary Clinton has not been qualified in a lot of things that she's done. I mean, the national health reform effort she led when her husband was president. I mean, how did she get that job? I mean, just by being married to the president. I mean, you can't tell me there weren't better people in the country to manage, health reform legislation than Hillary Clinton at the time. And the results of that being a spectacular policy failure, I rest squarely on her shoulders. And I think it was specifically because she was unqualified. So, there have been lots of episodes, along the way in her career. She just keeps seeming to be falling upward, and it has a lot to do with who she knows and where she's been rather than what she's capable of.
So the basic takeaway here, Molly, would be just to speak to her most recent experience as Secretary of State. If she was, and I think it's safe to argue, in way over her head in that job for a number of reasons, then being president is going to really be a challenge to her.
Sure. What's interesting is that her campaign claimed that they were going to run on that the basis of their campaign would be that she did such a good job with foreign policy while she was Secretary of State. And even recently as a year ago, they thought that that would be something that they could do. I think that you're not hearing them talk about her foreign policy successes because it's abundantly clear to so many people that they aren't there to be found. I mean, even her confusion on the Iraq War, which is something that Mr. Hemingway and I have a difference of belief on, but she supported invading Iraq, and then she called it her biggest mistake. She supported invading Libya and said that she thought it was a really good, wise move, and it turned out to be just a complete destabilization of the region. Her entire approach to the Arab Spring turned out to be wrong. I don't know if it's that she's in over her head in that she couldn't do it. She just hasn't shown good instincts, and I think it's more a failure of philosophy in this case.
Molly also did mention the Russian reset, which was her big spearheaded initiative when she took over the Secretary of State. And that, too, was a spectacular failure. I mean, you really have to dig deep to find a success of hers at the State Department.
Mark, can you give us kind of the big picture update analysis of the race for president on the Democratic side?
Yeah, so just a short time ago, I was actually looking at the numbers, and the Democratic delegate process is, even more crazy and complicated. Republicans have pledged delegates versus total number of delegates. And basically, the lay of the land is this, which is that Bernie Sanders is close enough in delegate count to Hillary Clinton such that it's still a competitive race and there's still a large number of outstanding delegates. But he's not close enough that people think, looking at the map for the remaining primaries, that he's necessarily going to close the gap. And as a result of that, Bernie Sanders is currently trying to exploit one of the weird quirks of the Democratic delegate process, which is that they have these things called superdelegates, which are basically just party insiders that are allowed to vote. And I think there's like 470 of them or thereabouts that get to vote for the whoever the Democratic nominee will be, and their votes count just as if he'd been a democratically elected delegate in the Democratic primary. And right now, right off the bat, because Hillary was viewed as inevitable, she's hoovered up on something like 430 of the Democratic superdelegates pledged themselves to her, and only 30 or so pledged themselves to Bernie. And Bernie right now is trying to make the argument that superdelegates need to switch sides over to him because all of the enthusiasm is with Clinton. Clinton's national favor rolls are incredibly high. I mean, I even just saw a recent poll that had Ted Cruz, because, you'd think not exactly a Republican candidate appeal to a general election electorate is leading Hillary by 5 percentage points. So Democrats have to be nervous about this, and Sanders wants to make the claim that they need someone fresher. I don't know if fresher constitutes a 70-plus-year-old socialist from Vermont, but that's the case he's trying to make.
We found out in Colorado and in other places, this is not a democracy like we're supposed to have. We're going to make it a better democracy, all right? A better and a fair democracy.
He's been on TV all day long saying Colorado was terrible. They stole the election. Donald, 65,000 people voted in the state of Colorado. They just didn't vote for you. They voted for our campaign.
That's Ted Cruz and Donald Trump with a difference of opinion on what happened in Colorado. Molly, you have written recently about this. You're a Colorado native as well. Can you tell us what actually did or didn't actually happen in Colorado?
I mean, it's part of a larger story about where Donald Trump does well and where Ted Cruz does well. And if it's an open primary where people who aren't members of the Republican Party can vote, Donald Trump does pretty well. He hasn't gotten a majority of votes in any state yet, but he usually wins a primary with a plurality. Ted Cruz does really well when the vote is limited to Republicans and done in a caucus manner. He's kind of swept those races. Colorado is a caucus state, and it has been for more than 100 years. What that means is your first stage of the political process is to gather with your neighbors in a precinct where you elect delegates to the next regional area, which is usually a county assembly. And from there, you can be elected to be a delegate at the state convention or for a congressional district assembly. And delegates to the national convention, and just like with the Democratic Party, what you need to secure the nomination are the votes of delegates to the national convention. Delegates to the national convention are chosen from congressional district assemblies and the state assembly. This is a procedure that is somewhat antiquated and extremely inefficient and a favorite of conservatives because it gives conservatives and grassroots movements tremendous power over, party establishment types. But it does take a lot of work to organize. And while Donald Trump does really well at getting all the media attention, I mean, astronomically more media attention than anyone else, which is worth so much money, Ted Cruz is, whatever you think about him, his campaign is really good at understanding how to actually get delegates. And so they worked Colorado, and they managed to do a complete sweep of every single delegate. I can't remember how many were involved. I think it was about 35 or so, but they all went to Ted Cruz. And it's not something where you can come in at the last minute and try and win. You actually have to do months of organization. And Donald Trump was claiming that it was unfair. I mean, it's the process that Colorado has used for over 100 years, and the particular rules for this year were set forth last August, so it was not a surprise or anything. And I think he just kind of got his clock cleaned.
So, Mark, what does that say about two things before we take this break? Donald Trump's, has this campaign really been serious about going all the way from the very beginning, that they didn't even stop and figure out the rules for all 50 states on how to get the most delegates? And then what about his ground game in general?
Oh, one of the things about the Trump campaign is they've just been clueless about, all of the basic rules and how all these contests work. And more than that, just how modern campaigns work. I mean, there were reports coming out of Iowa that one of the reasons why Trump lost Iowa is that he refused to pay for any internal campaign polling because he said, well, the media is doing polls that are showing that I'm ahead. Well, that's not the way that polling works. There's a reason why most campaigns spend, thousands and thousands of dollars in polling, so they can have that information at their disposal. Similarly, there are all kinds of ways the Republican primary process, quote unquote, rigged in ways that benefited Donald Trump. And, as I recall, I believe it was the Missouri primary where Donald Trump got just a fractional amount more of the total vote than Ted Cruz. But because he ended up just by a very small amount of the top vote getter in the state, he ended up with a huge amount of delegates more than Cruz. Again, it was on a very small margin of victory. Well, was that primary rigged against Cruz, or was that just the way the rules were? I mean, it's just the way the rules were, and Cruz didn't complain at the time. So, I mean, it's really just a case of somebody who is a political neophyte and is surrounded by a yes men, I think, who, aren't doing the organization and aren't doing what they need to do to just win. And that's what Donald Trump promised to do. He promised to be a winner. Well, he's not being a winner, and he hasn't been for a long time. He's been out-organized with the Cruz campaign, and it's pretty bad.
Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard, along with Molly Hemingway, senior editor for the Federalist. They're our guests. We're getting our weekly update on the November elections when we come back from this break. We'll stay with Colorado a little bit and the necessity of kind of paying attention to those little details, like how do voters actually end up voting when you're headed toward the nomination of your party. Stay tuned. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April is a story about one man's journey from death row executioner to Lutheran pastor. It's titled The Executioner's Redemption, My Story of Violence, Death, and Saving Grace. You can check it out at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Executioner's Redemption is on sale for $12.99. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, The Executioner's Redemption.
Would you like to help a college or seminary student attend the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference? You can purchase a conference scholarship for a contribution of $100 to Issues Etc. You can donate online at issuesetc.org/scholarship. Or you can make your $100 check payable to Issues Etc. Write Scholarship in the memo line and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Molly Hemingway is our guest, senior editor for The Federalist, along with her husband, Mark Hemingway, senior writer for The Weekly Standard. We're getting our update on the November elections. Molly, I wanted to stick with Colorado for just a second here, because it's not just the Trump campaign that failed to understand. You've written recently about an actual, I guess it was a county rep in this caucusing system that also failed to understand the system in which he was involved.
Well, the story that Colorado was rigged really got going when a man posted a video claiming that he had been denied entry to the state assembly where he planned to vote for Trump, and that he was denied precisely because he was a Trump voter. This was picked up by every major news station. Donald Trump trumpeted the story. The Drudge Report picked it up, and it went viral. And I looked into it, and it turned out to just be completely untrue. This man, Larry Wayne Lindsay, lives in Castle Rock, Colorado, which actually happens to be where I'm from. And he did go to his neighborhood caucus, which is the first step to becoming a delegate for your candidate of choice. And he convinced his fellow neighbors that he should be a delegate to the county assembly. They voted him in. That was just a few weeks later. He never showed up to the county assembly. He had put his name in that he would like to go from the county assembly to the state assembly, but he didn't even show up to advocate for himself, and so he got zero votes. And if he had shown up, he would have at least gotten one vote, which might have helped him get to the state assembly, or he might have been able to convince his people in his county, again, that they should vote for him to go to the state assembly. So when he showed up and they wouldn't let him go in as a delegate, it's because he wasn't a delegate. He had not gone through the process required to become a delegate. He hadn't paid, you actually have to pay fees to get your badge at different assemblies and whatnot. He hadn't done that. He hadn't signed in. He had no paperwork. He just went with this claim that he had been disenfranchised, and it just, he has nothing to back it up whatsoever. But he also made the claim that, well, okay, so I didn't do what I was supposed to do. That's because this caucus system is too confusing, and furthermore, I was deliberately misled. And he had a name of someone he thought had maybe told him that he didn't need to go to the county caucus. Well, I talked to his local state representative, and his state representative had documentation of having had an 8-minute phone call with this delegate that, about how it was important for him to get to the county assembly. And the state representative was having this phone call because it's at the county assembly that he gets nominated. So he was calling his constituents, just trying to make sure that they would vote for him. I mean, that was the entire purpose of his call, was to get this guy to the county assembly. So he claims he wasn't even told of this county assembly and that it was too confusing. And here his own state rep had personally led him through the process. I mean, you couldn't get more personal treatment than that type of that type of help. So his story just completely fell apart, but it was the main reason why we even had a national conversation about Colorado being unfair and all this stuff.
So I want the same question to you before we go on to a couple of general questions, Molly. What do you think it says about the seriousness of the Trump campaign from the beginning? I mean, if I'm going to run for president, I'm going to hire people who will tell me down to the last detail in each state from party leaders what I got to do to leverage that system.
Okay, I'm going to differ from Mark here a little bit in that he said that Donald Trump hadn't been winning in some time. I mean, even though Donald Trump had a really rough go of things in Wisconsin, and he's lost some really important delegate contests in the last few weeks, he still has more delegates than Ted Cruz. I mean, he's still, quote-unquote, winning the race. He's just coming into some pretty strong headwinds, but he's also going to win New York, and he'll get quite a few delegates out of New York. And I think that, yeah, he doesn't have a traditional campaign. Some people view that, some people are highlighting that that's a problem. It's also been the whole reason why he's doing well. He doesn't play the game the way you're supposed to. He doesn't say what you're supposed to. He decided that instead of investing in an organization, he would control and manipulate the media, and that's worked out pretty well for him. And he, it's not going to carry him all the way home, and so it'll be interesting to see whether he starts making some halfway decent hiring decisions or thinking about how he's communicating to the public at large. But I would defend his decision to go with this completely different campaign.
Okay, Mark, kind of spinning off the subject of what kind of garners a guy like Trump's support, most Americans think that Washington is broken, some beyond repair, others say it can be repaired. Why don't we hear GOP candidates talk about these kind of basic reforms, government reforms, like term limits, like a balanced budget amendment? I remember these things from back in the 90s, line item vetoes, campaign finance reform. Why have all of those basic reforms kind of fallen off the radar for the GOP?
That's a good question. I think that there was a lot of talk about policy, and there was very heavy policy discussion in 2012, and I don't think that necessarily redounded to their benefit, which is a shame. I mean, I think that the Republican Party has a lot of, great ideas to offer, and for a long time they were, in fact, known as the party of ideas. But the problem is that when you launch these attacks on things like, whether or not the Obama administration gutted welfare reform, oftentimes they blow up in your face because the media is pretty biased. And further, it takes a really long time to actually explain welfare policy to people. You want to talk about healthcare reform or, the constitutional mechanisms involved in term limits and things like that. This requires educating the American people. And if you're busy educating the American people, it's hard to sell them at the same time on you as the candidate at the same time. But I think you're right about this, and in that there's a sort of irony here, which is that a lot of people are looking for answers outside the political system precisely because the political system hasn't been able to deliver what they need as a matter of specific policies. But at the same time, people are, turning toward cults of personality in the case of, Trump and Bernie Sanders, you know, for answers. And I, you know, don't know if that's going to give you the answers you want. You know, you really do need to, you know, knuckle under and realize that, you know, this is partly about self-governance, and you need to be educated about how the American system works and pressure our politicians to do the kinds of specific actions and enact the specific policies that you think are going to help you. I'm not sure the American public is capable of that at the moment.
Molly, I remember 1994 Contract with America, an entirely new class of legislators swept into Washington, D.C. on at least two of those issues, term limits and a balanced budget. They had that taken away from them very briefly. But why are those issues not on the radar?
Well, I think what we should focus on about the Contract with America is its top-line message. I don't think some people do care about policy. There is always a fraction of the electorate that truly does have thoughts on policy, and they want to enact a given policy. But I think a lot of people aren't really digging down into policy. They're going at a much more emotional level, and that's happening even more in 2016 than was the case back when the Contract with America was such a phenomenon. What Newt Gingrich knew and what others who were involved with that knew was that you just had to have like a radically different type of conversation where you simply dealt with voter angst in a way that took it, like that you acknowledged that it was a real thing. And what blows me away about the Republican Party is now nearly a full year into this Trump phenomenon, I don't think they still get it. And I'm not saying that they should overvalue it and that it still remains a pretty small percentage of the population that's even bothering to show up to a Republican voting contest. But it is something real. It is something significant. And I think that when people hear sort of minor policy solutions as a response, they're what the angry voters will think is, they don't get just how angry I am. They don't get that I'm talking about the very existence of the existence of the republic, of what this country will continue to be, of some big moral positions and a position of strength. And I think that it would have made a lot of sense for the Republican Party to listen and observe what was going on. They were given this gift of a populist movement a few years ago, and they seemed to treat it with disdain. And they are now reaping they're reaping what they sowed there. I don't know if that quite answers it, and that I think it's actually a much bigger communication problem than a policy problem.
Well, right, and I agree with everything Molly said, but I would just add the other big problem here is that any big policy solution is in the current situation we're in, fiscally in particular, is going to be necessarily very painful. Like Medicare, you know, alone, which is a single government program, is over $40 trillion in unfunded liabilities. There's no way to, quote-unquote, reform that program without making some, you know, significant cuts to the program that are going to affect the way that ordinary Americans live their lives. And until we start, you know, feeling the pain from all kinds of other financial trade-offs, and you know, I don't think people are going to be willing to make those, you know, short-term cuts to, you know, and they're going to make cuts today knowing that it'll prevent even bigger calamity in the future. So I really think that people just haven't gotten to the place where they realize the dire consequences that we're facing. They just know they're broken. They're just angry.
If I could add on to that, I think that conservatives have been very worried about the expansion of the state for decades, and they have been warning for decades that the growth of the administrative state and that the size and scope of government, the areas that our federal, state, and local government have control over, is actually creating a huge problem for our ability to even fix the situation. They have been warning that cultural decline will have calamitous effects on the country. And now you're kind of starting to see what conservatives have been predicting for a long time come true. And I think it's not a comfort to say, oh, we predicted all these bad things would happen and now they're happening. But we shouldn't be surprised.
Folks, you can stay informed by reading Molly Hemingway's and Mark Hemingway's columns. You'll find links at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Molly Hemingway is senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Mark Hemingway is senior writer for The Weekly Standard. Mark, thank you.
Thanks again.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Dr. Carl Fikencher. Looking forward to Sunday morning. This coming Sunday morning, according to the three-year lectionary, is kind of informally called Good Shepherd Sunday because it's got all the Good Shepherd stuff in it. And we'll be talking about all of that when we come back from this break. Dr. Carl Fikencher of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, will be our guest.
Even if your child has mild to moderate autism, learning disabilities, attention difficulties, or other learning challenges, he can receive a classical Christian education. The Simply Classical curriculum was created by Issues Etc. guest Cheryl Swope, an author, educator with a master's degree in special education, and homeschooling mother of twins with special needs. The Simply Classical curriculum has become an answer to prayer for parents and schools. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and save $5 with the coupon code LPR.
You can support the boys' basketball program at Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, by entering a team into our annual golf scramble fundraiser. It's Saturday, May 28th at Oakbrook Golf Course in Edwardsville. Hi, this is Anthony Smith, head boys' basketball coach at Metro East Lutheran High School. Join me and fellow Knights for a golf scramble May 28th at Oakbrook Golf Course. For more information, send me an email, anthony.smith@melhs.org. Thanks for your support.
Lutheran Talk.
In Lutheranism, I come as a guilty sinner in need of hearing the forgiving words of Christ every single time I gather. Every single time.
Lutheran Music. The new Lutheran Public Radio app. Download for iPhone, Android, Windows Phone, and Kindle at issuesetc.org.
This is Pastor Donald Jordan welcoming you to Redeemer Evangelical Lutheran Church in Chico, California. We stand upon the inspired, inerrant Word of God and preach Jesus Christ and Him crucified. Students at Chico State and Butte College are welcome to our college group. Our divine service is at 10 and Sunday school at 9. We are located at 750 Moss Avenue, and our website is RedeemerChico.org.
Quality, quantity, qualified. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Our school is committed to authentic Lutheranism, the entire Book of Concord, and indeed to authentic Lutheranism as it has continued to be confessed and practiced through the centuries, right up into our own time.
Dr. Cameron McKenzie, chairman of the Department of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
We're committed then to biblical, confessional Christianity and Lutheranism and applying it to the world of today in as effective a way as we can.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu, ctsfw.edu, or call 1-800-481-2155, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.